Hello, everyone. You just tuned in to Set for Success with Richard Lannan. You knew that already. I am your host for this episode. We're going to continue our journey. What is that journey? To help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, life. And we're going to do this through chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their success, to help you create the success that you deserve. And you do deserve to be successful. You know what? I think that's a great affirmation. I think right now, if you're driving in your car, sitting at home or in a restaurant or listening to some podcast, whatever it might be, you should sit there and say, I deserve to be successful. I am set for success. Did you do it? Awesome. Listen, I love quotes. You listen to me and know that I look up quotes daily, and I actually start to think I should probably publish a few of these. That's what my friends are starting to say. So here's today's quote. Business opportunities are like buses. There's always another one coming. Pretty wild, eh? Think about that. Business opportunities are like buses. There's always another one coming. That was actually from Richard Branson. Now, if you don't know who Richard Branson is, it's Sir Richard Branson. He's an English business magnate, investor, author, philanthropist. He founded Virgin Group, the Virgin Group, who controls over 400 companies. I'm amazed to find out that it was over 400 companies now. He expressed an interest in entrepreneurship at a young age. I believe he might have been a teenager, if I remember correctly. And I think he sold vinyl albums mail order when he first started out. Pretty awesome, pretty amazing now considering he owns an airline. So you know that I love the country we live in, Canada. It's an awesome place. And I think we are the greatest country on earth for entrepreneurship. That is Canada. I don't know if everybody always thinks that way. But in every category from high tech, food processing and production, textiles, natural resource servicing, health and fitness to specialty foods, we have it all. To our universities, our colleges, and to the organizations that support business. You see, small business makes up 97% of the Canadian economy, somewhere around 96-97%, with less than 100 people per company working in them, and they create opportunities every single day. Small business is the main street of our existence, and our leaders should keep in mind when discussing growth and opportunities that small business is a big part of that. I must admit, when it comes to business in Canada, small business, I take it very personally. There are lots of entrepreneurs with great ideas that need to be supported, invested in, and helped along the way to their vision of success. There are times when federally, provincially, and locally, we must take the initiative to invest in the success of small business. As a business strategist, I hear about business a lot. The one thing that gets me the most is profit is bad. I actually hear people say that sometimes in small business, profit is bad. I want you to invite you to think differently about profit and money. Profit and money is not bad. It is just what you choose to do with it is good or bad. See, profit in a small business means the ability to pay more, add more people, expand the business, add and create jobs. In turn, it puts food on the table of somebody. It clothes somebody's back and it offers a roof over their head. I know a lot of small business people, and when it comes to their employees, they think this way. They think of their people almost like family or like family. I hear that a lot. So when it comes to your next purchase or transaction, I invite you to consider buying your next coffee, snack, or whatever it is from a local small business. Support our economy, create opportunities, create jobs. So here's the scoop. As I was thinking about the show today, I gave it some thought and I wondered who could I have in my seat next to me that's a small business or took a small business journey, an entrepreneur, someone young, someone driven, yet someone who is an everyday Canadian with a strong local economy values. I look back over the hundreds of shows we've done here on Set for Success and I realized I knew a person that would be willing to provide an update on their business experience. Yes, I meant our guest today about a year and a half ago. I think I just read the wrong words there. I met our guest today about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago. They had brewed up an idea for a local micro business that serves beverages that go well with a hockey game, a backyard barbecue, even at your local venue. And what does that mean by when I say the word brew? Beer. So today we're going to be hanging out with Kevin, president and CEO of Little Brown Jug. Kevin, it's great to have you back on Set for Success today.
Thanks, Richard. Thank you for having me back.
I was really stoked that you said, yeah, I'll come in and join you for your show. So I think what we should do is, in case our listeners don't know a lot about you, let's start off with Kevin, the local entrepreneur. Tell us a little about yourself personally. We'll do the personal question first.
Sure. I grew up in Winnipeg, but before I moved back almost 3 years ago, I worked for 10 years as an economist with the federal government in Ottawa, so working on all kinds of front page microeconomic issues. And as I was writing the business plan, that really helped sort of form some of my ideas about what kind of industry and how I want to create a company that could be productive. You know, in your intro, you talked about paying your employees more and productivity and stuff. And really, the beer industry offers a great opportunity to do that. And that was really appealing to me because we can invest in capital in a way that you can hire more skilled labor and pay them more.
Oh, wow. You know, that's actually quite nice to know, because one of the next questions I was going to actually ask you, why beer? Like, what is it that you were drawn to beer? Is it just because you're Canadian? I got to poke a little bit of fun.
For sure. I mean, there's not just one reason for it. I mean, I was living in Ontario at the time and got involved with the Ontario and Vermont and Quebec craft brewers, and I could see the transformative impact that these businesses were having. And I guess if I look at... you know, if you look at kind of like the homogenization of products since the Second World War, you know, products get more and more homogenized, right? And then there's a movement in the 90s to sort of towards the local farmers market and stuff. And what we do at Little Brown Jug and what Craft Brewer is doing is something in between, where we have the skill and the technology to create highly normalized products, but to do it on a small and productive scale. And that's really something unique about, I think, craft brewing.
Okay, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. When you talk about the movement from the 90s and the local movement, when you look at your product, I'm just curious, do you actually source a lot of things locally when you look at the beer that you brew?
So locally, in the broadest sense, our equipment is all Canadian made.
Okay. Well, that's good. I like to think Canadian.
Yeah, yes. We use a lot of Canadian suppliers, and our grain is largely Canadian as well.
Okay.
On the hop side, we do try to support our local Manitoba hop growers, but they aren't yet to a scale of production which would allow us to source from them for all of our beer or even a little bit of our beer. So those come from Oregon. But something about our beer 1919 is that it's actually, it was made by, the hop that we use in it was made by crossing a Manitoban hop with an English hop. And it was one of the first hops in the commercial world brewing industry.
So I don't know a lot about brewing a beer. I'm going to admit it right now. So you might have to help me out along the way. But I have checked out your facilities and your location and stuff. You had chosen to actually move down into Old Market Square, correct? Why that location?
Well, yes, we're just about two blocks off of Old Market Square on the edge of the Exchange District. And I think there's a few reasons. One is... I think of us as like an urban manufacturer, an urban microbrewery, and even though people can come into the tap room and see all the equipment and have that full experience, we're really a production brewery. We're really thinking about making that beer and sending it out, but creating that connection with the heart of the city was really important for us, and the way that we can collaborate. Our three values at Little Brown Jug are honesty, community, quality, and that honesty and community matters being downtown.
So I think what we'll do is when we come back, we'll take a short break. When we come back, I think we'll talk a little bit about your values and how they impact your business and some of the challenges that you've had in the last couple of years. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Kevin. He is the owner and CEO of Little Brown Jug, and we were talking about beer, which can be probably a very much favorable topic to have, actually, or conversation. Just before the break, you mentioned your three values, your business values, which I assume you started your business with these values. What were those three values again?
So we've started with honesty, community, quality, and that really informs everything that we do. That honesty is the transparency in the process and how we treat our customers and our culture at work. The community, we use our space to hold all kinds of events, community-supported agriculture boxes. We've done motorcycle events. Nuit Blanche was our biggest night of the year. We've had some really fantastic community partnerships there. And then on quality, it's really about having highly qualified staff and really top-notch equipment that we're really proud to run.
Yeah. So those things tie in very nicely. I'm glad you actually brought that up, because I think so many times when it comes to a business, understanding what your core values are leads to the decisions you make. And the fact that you understood your values up front, your core values up front, really contributed to some of the things you're doing. I'm curious, you rattle off some examples really quick, okay? So I want to go back a little bit. We'll go back to community, first. And I know that was the second one. But you mentioned a few events, like you said, a motorcycle event. And I know I have a lot of motorcycle enthusiasts out there. So explain what the motorcycle event was. Give us an idea how that tied into the community and what that event was all about.
So different organizations and individuals come to us with ideas about how they want to use our space. We have this fantastic old livery on the edge of the Exchange District. And there's all this great industrial stainless steel in there lit with our colored lights. And so people have asked us to host all kinds of events. And one of them was this vintage motorcycle show for a weekend. And other times we've had, we've had wreath making workshops and any kinds of vegan festivals. And we're not looking to monetize that. Our real vision, like, we make beer, we sell beer. That's how we make our money, and that's what we do. And all of this other stuff is really just to build something in that neighborhood and in our city and to create something.
I guess what you can say is, and I have visited your location, it's just a really cool space. Like, when you walk in and to see that sort of mix between, I'm going to call it old warehouse and industrial, that heavy wood, high ceilings, that kind of thing. And that's what probably drives the community towards saying, hey, can we use this space for something?
Definitely. But, you know, Richard, since you've been there, we've expanded quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, probably.
And we have a lot more tin in there.
Oh, really? So I should come back for another visit.
You should come back. The main thing is actually this last spring, we got a canning line. So we got a lot of production, and then we got a canning line. So now we're in all the liquor stores. And that was a huge step. You kind of grow in, like, you kind of grow, you plateau, you grow again, right? There's steps to the growth. So we had to bring on a lot more capacity. And then you buy a canning line and it is definitely not plug and play. Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of challenges to make something like that calibrated and tune it up.
That makes a lot of sense, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. Tell us a little bit about this kind of things that you've done to increase your production. Because when we first met, say 2 years ago, let's see if we can maybe go production. You tell me if you're willing to say. Or not, I might not have any show. But what were you producing, say, maybe 2 years ago versus what you're producing now? Like, how has that changed? And what's been the journey to that transition?
Well, 2 years ago, we just celebrated our 2-year anniversary, so we were producing nothing.
Okay.
From zero, I opened a Little Brown Jug. There was three employees. There was a brewer, there's me, and somebody helping out with sort of delivery, sales, and taproom stuff.
Okay. Right.
And now we're about 15 employees, but that's probably about 10 to 11 full-time equivalents, if those were only full-time. We have about 9 or 10 people that are full-time, and then a few part-time there.
Sure.
And, we've gone from, our capacity, and this is not what we're brewing yet. We started with two little fermenters. The most we could have made was 2,000 hectoliters a year. Hectoliter is 100 liters.
Okay.
That's always the question.
Yeah. I'm gonna, so what do you mean, hectoliter? How many bottles of beer is that?
Yeah,
so
for sure.
There's the joke, right?
Yeah, I know.
Right? I'm sure you hear that a lot. People would just say, what's a hectoliter? But how many bottles of beer is that?
Yeah.
So go ahead, anyway.
And then now we have about capacity for about 10,000. So that's about a million liters would be our maximum capacity. Now, we're not there yet. We just started our canning line this summer. Okay. So we're growing with that. But, in Manitoba, Manitobans drink about 2,000 of our beer every single day.
Oh, really? So congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That. That's over 2 years. So
that's over
I
two
would
years,
say that's
yeah.
significant, right? So with the increase in canning line, so I said, I wrote down 2,000 initially, then 2,000 hectoliters now, 10,000 hectoliters now, which is 10,000 liters. See, I'm doing the math as we're talking, so I hope I'm doing well. But you have a canning line that would give you a capacity of doing a lot more. So what would be your maximum on your present capacity?
So our maximum would be that 10,000 hectoliters, and then after that, we'd have to add more tanks.
Okay.
Our canning line, of the tall 473 milliliter cans, it spits off about 80 a minute. It minimizes the oxygen uptake in that, and the product loss on it is probably 4%, which is like a third of what most kind of basic canning lines are. So it's really a marvel, but moving into a packaged product is like kind of like creating a brand new product line. Like, okay. We had this one beer, and we were available at about 180 restaurants and bars in Manitoba, and but that was all in kegs. And now we're in cans, and that's a whole new kettle of fish.
When you say kegs, you're talking about the big steel containers.
Yes.
Well, didn't you have like a bottle product too for your 1919?
So our beer, like when you come to the brewery, you can get it in a growler or a 750 milliliter bottle, but we're filling that on a special growler filler that comes from a keg. So it goes into a keg first, and then we put it in the bottle.
So that's where you store it, and then you put in the bottle and seal it
right
from there.
Yeah. But when we're canning, we're going right from the tanks into the can.
Into the can. That's awesome. That's a lot of growth. That's a lot of expansion. I mean, that's, to me, that's like you went out and you bought a whole bunch of new toys. So you could do stuff with.
So many toys.
And so much time. Yeah. And then play with them. That's sort of cool. You know what? I'm looking forward to seeing it in. I'm going to pop down probably shortly and check things out within the next few weeks. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We're hanging out with Kevin, CEO and owner of Little Brown Jug. And we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit with him about some of the challenges he has as an entrepreneur. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Kevin. I haven't even said your last name, Kevin.
Kevin Selch.
Selch. There you go. And I do have it written down here. It's Kevin Selch. I do like saying owner and president and CEO of Little Brown Jug. I like how that rings off my tongue. I must admit, even my wife and I were just talking about, sometimes we talk about who's on the show and stuff like this. And I say, you know, sort of an awesome name company, Little Brown Jug. I says, I have to sort of say it, right? Okay, so just before the break, we're talking a bit about the business, your production changes, which is just awesome. I think that's a great story to share with everybody and really giving people a vision about how much you're able to produce and what you can produce going forward. I suspect like any entrepreneur with a vision, there's certain things that keep you up at night. So I always like to say, you know, it's 3 a.m. in the morning, you wake up. What are you thinking about, Kevin? What keeps you up at night?
I know it's a bit of a cliche, but it's always the people and it's always your organization and your team. But to step back, like I feel like I came back to Winnipeg with this big vision of what I wanted to do. And I had this very detailed business plan. And largely, like, we've accomplished a lot of those goals. And sometimes you get down in the weeds. And I thought that I feel like I was the vision guy and I didn't necessarily know if I would be good at managing the day-to-day and managing the team. And in fact, to be honest, I kind of dreaded it. I dreaded that idea. But I've come to the point where actually that is my favorite part. I have sort of my key managers in each of their area. And the idea that I get to like coach them and help them grow is actually the best part. And so when we look at hiring at Little Brown Jug, we've identified like what is our culture, even though we're such a small business, because it's so much more difficult to change a culture than it is maybe to build it from the outset.
Yeah.
So for us, it's really, we're a very horizontal group where everybody provides input to every other part of the business, even within the, so there's sort of no wrong input. And everybody on our team is very entrepreneurial and I would say ambitious, not necessarily personally ambitious, but just kind of ambitious for the company and what we're doing and what we're trying to grow and where we're trying to go with this. And then the last thing is we're all very analytical. The management term is like Pareto improvement.
Pareto improvement.
So like every time something goes wrong, we do step back and we analyze it. Like, why did this happen? Is there a technological solution? Was this a communication error? And so we're constantly striving to make our systems better. And so my goal every day is to like create an organization that functions and that can almost operate without me. I mean,
well, no, yeah.
But you know, just that it functions on its own fundamental basis. Like you have systems in place and communication and structure and. Like, that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, you know what? I actually agree with what you're saying. I mean, I know that a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with that concept. The one that you're sharing right now is that having a business that functions without me. But the question becomes, are you working on your business or working in your business? And I would reverse it and say, if you're working in your business, that means the business sort of cannot function without you. But if you're working on your business, then having the systems and processes in place so that the business can function without you becomes extremely important.
Absolutely. Like, it's like, what is, at the end of the day, the entrepreneur has to ask himself or herself, what is the value that I bring that nobody else can bring to this, right? And so, you know, I enjoy knowing every aspect of the business. Like, I know everything in and out. And some days, like yesterday, I was climbing on a tank, adjusting lights or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so you're like, but in some ways, that's kind of like the fun part, to be able to pick and choose these aspects of where you're going to do a deep dive into, like, what's going on in here and how do we solve this? But like, but what can I do that nobody else can do in my organization? I think I can build the team and I can lead the team. And that's where I put all of my energy and thought.
So let's go back to the idea of build the team and lead the team. Would you say that you were a natural leader, or is this something that you're learning as you're going along?
I'm definitely learning it. I mean, I was even hesitant to kind of take on that role. I mean, I knew I would have to.
Yeah, well, you own the company.
but it's very investors. Yeah.
But it's very different, right?
When you go from 3 to, say, 15 employees, about how you're going to structure this and how you're going to motivate people and the kind of people you're going to look for and stuff. And we have, you know, at the brewery, it's really interesting because we have people that have, say, high school education, some university, you know, an undergrad, a master's, and a PhD. So we have like a whole gamut.
That's blended.
Of like blended thing. And everybody is just like the attitude of everybody is something you can't create that magic overnight. You have to build that block by block. And I'm so fortunate to have that team. And I think that, in a way, I think if I could pin one thing on our success to date, it's that permeates everything we do. Like that permeates to the customer experience. And what's amazing is like people have this warm affinity for Little Brown Jug. And I don't know how that happened, except that we just try to put out this positive energy and create something that makes people smile.
I wonder if it goes back to the heart that one of your values is community. Would you think that the idea that creating community is, and really living that, by the way, because some organizations, small businesses, would say we're a community-based organization, we want to create community. They're really not. But it sounds to me like you guys are trying to create a community that's just not internal to the organization, but it's external.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I look back on, of course, as a small business, we have like financial goals and stuff like that.
Sure,
but
sure.
But that's not what gets me up in the morning. And, you know, these kinds of values and my team is what gets me up in the morning. And I think we partner with a lot of organizations and we do a lot of events, not because there's any kind of immediate gain for us. It's kind of taking that long view. Like, yeah, people might drink your beer or you might have a little bit more awareness, but like, this is just good for the city and good for our neighborhood. And that's where we go with that.
So you're almost rolling off the, what do they call it? The three C's: good for the community, good for the company, good for the customer.
Yeah, for sure.
did you know the three C's?
Nope.
You do now, eh? There's actually four or five, but a lot of people use the three. Sorry, they just roll off my tongue. I can't help myself some days. That's really cool, because when I listen to you speak, I mean, my mind's automatically going to these things that I know about business and going, oh, Kevin's doing this and Kevin's doing this. Or maybe I should say Little Brown Jug's doing this and Little Brown Jug's doing that, because they're really just representing the business right now.
Yeah, I want to emphasize that this business is not about me. This was never a vanity project. It's about, you know, it's about our customers, it's about our accounts, and it's about our team, like, and our suppliers. Like, it's a whole effort. And that's why I think we talked about last time, that's why I named it something that wasn't about me or a geographic indicator. Little Brown Jug is its own thing, and it's what people put into it.
Now, but isn't there a historic, I don't know if it's the historic aspect of 1919 or the name of the company, but isn't there a historic aspect to the name?
Little Brown Jug was a Civil War era drinking song, right? But it was more about rum and gin and stuff. But today with the growler culture and filling your growler jug with craft beer, which is very popular now, it's definitely well suited for the age.
What about 1919? Well, tell us a story about that before we take a break.
Yeah, so there's two aspects. One is we use brewer's gold in our beer. That's the hop.
Okay. you had my mind going. You put gold in your beer?
That would be amazing.
Yeah, it would be. Go ahead.
And it's made by crossing a wild Manitoban hop with an English hop. It was the first commercially available hop in the world brewing industry, and that was in 1919.
So you named it after with a date.
And then finally, just being in the exchange, it's a bit of an homage to the Winnipeg General Strike, a very important year here in Winnipeg, and coming up on the 100-year anniversary
Yeah, 100-year anniversary. I was actually reading something on the International Press about that yesterday, which I thought was fascinating that that's actually been picked up in the world and other places regarding the impact of 1919 on Winnipeg and the economy.
definitely. In fact, I think more international labor organizations are aware of it sometimes than local people, because there's a lot of events planned for next year. Labor Congress is coming from all over the world.
So there we go. So we're on the map. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success, and we're hanging out with Kevin, CEO of The Little Brown Jug. And we've been talking a little bit about beer and brewing and hops. And I have to admit, I said to Kevin during the commercial, I'm totally out of my element. I understand how to drink beer, but I don't understand how to make it. So we're going to learn more when we come back. This is Set for Success. We'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. You know, Kevin, just before the break, we were talking a little bit about 1919 and the emphasis or where that came from, which I think historically really sort of a cool historic connection to the local economy that you're working in. I am curious, though, why are you only doing one beer? Like, why is it just the one as opposed to some microbreweries, I'm guessing, would have multiple?
Right. So most microbreweries, brewpubs and others come to the market with multiple beers. And we just decided to choose another path. And, you know, at the beginning of the show, I talked about sort of the standardization of products, you know, from the 50s, 80s into the 90s, and then this kind of fraying away. Yeah. But for us, I think the biggest challenge in craft beer is actually to make that consistent and repeatable product. I mean, you know, you look at a macro beer like Budweiser or something, and their specs on that are really, really tight. And ours are obviously, our parameters are going to be a little bit wider. But every day we take that challenge to try to narrow those parameters to make a tighter and tighter product. And we use all kinds of lab equipment and measuring equipment and just different technology and dashboards to basically control and repeat the process.
Over and over again.
Over and over again.
But that's going back to that whole concept of quality control. Because if I hear you right, and I'm sort of going to repeat you back, I mean, there's some variation in what you're actually brewing based on changes in your environment, whether it's the raw materials you're using or something happening externally. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, there's everything from the grain to the glass basically could change. So we get different lot analysis for our grains that we're putting in, right? And we can be, because we're making that same beer week after week, we can start now, and this is our kind of our future challenge, to sort of make changes to your process based on your raw ingredients. Okay, this came in with like less humidity and stuff, so that means we have to do these three things throughout the process. And then as you're fermenting the beer, you're making adjustments the whole way. Because we have many like wonderful customers that drink our beer all the time, they'll notice if there's just even a small change. And these are like respectable variations in a product, right? Yeah. But to keep working on that is really the challenge. And because we don't have, you know, we can't just spin off a beer as something else if it totally goes off the rails, right? So we have to always be kind of controlling our process.
No, it's good that you actually have that quality control in place. And you did talk about the Petro using that concept and everything earlier on for figuring out what's going wrong. I think it's good to talk about that variation because organic, natural. So there's a couple of words, and I'm familiar with it because I do a lot of reading in this space. But creating organic products versus creating natural products, mm-hmm. what that means, buying your resources, your materials locally, and how the variation happens. And I think that's what we're talking about, where, you know, if you have a really moist farming year, that has an impact on what you're able to put out. If you have a really dry season and the product comes in or your raw materials come in, I am using raw materials as the concept here. That's how I think about it. Then that has a variation. That's what I think I hear you saying.
Yeah, there's all kinds of, you know, you have a product that has a certain spec, and it can vary from lot to lot that's coming into your plant, but then even just in the time it was shipped to your plant, like it could have changed, and then you could do some on-site testing of this, and, you know, the way that food's going right now, it's all about traceability, and so even being able to work with some of our suppliers to trace back to specific farms, because these companies are big enough that they can get on top of that, and we can actually create that kind of record of our product.
I'm glad that you talked about the word traceability, because it's one of my favorite words when it comes to requirements. And I have the opportunity to speak and teach and work with clients in this space a lot. And I have to teach them what traceability is. And it's so important when you have an organization that's putting out a product that you're creating, you're manufacturing, you're processing it with materials that are coming from farms, to be able to connect it back so you do know what's going on. So thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. And even within the brewing industry, right? Like, we have yeast and we have generations of yeast, and what yeast is doing what in what tank, and to be able to trace that sort of family tree of your yeast through the system is a whole other fun game.
Is technology helping in that way? Like, are you able to log on somewhere and check that stuff out, or do you have to actually get on the phone and talk to people about it? I'm just curious.
Okay, so this is like the real fun of what I think we're trying to create at Little Brown Jug, is that the big breweries have, like, they have massive quantities, they can blend, they can control, they have major labs. And so we've tried to, even our whole brew house, this kind of was a fun engineering project where we tried to take big brewing technology and shrink it down to size. And so even like lab stuff, there's so much more we can do. There's so much we're already starting to do, and just kind of building out big scale, the stuff that the big guys are doing, and just bringing it in-house.
Making more micro lab, yeah, but has the same capability of what the larger organizations can do.
Yeah, and this wasn't always possible. Like, these kinds of, like, this kind of technological and lab equipment, and even our brew house. You couldn't have made a brew house like this, you know, 20 years ago. Nobody was making it.
It's pretty amazing. That is absolutely amazing. I know we should talk about the future a little bit. So what's on your plate for going forward? What are you thinking about doing?
Well, I guess one of the things that, you know, came back and started Little Brown Jug, and we've really focused so hard on sort of sticking to our knitting, or to use another metaphor, just swimming in our lane.
And swimming in your lane.
We just swim in our lane. Yeah. We just we're not really paying much attention to what else is going on around us, and we're just like swim.
But then you get
a little bit pulled down into the details, and it's hard to be like, it's hard to sometimes separate what's important and what's less important.
Yeah.
And so I'm hope to take a few weeks off real soon and just kind of recalibrate and kind of climb that mountain again and look out and see what's next for us in Little Brown Jug.
I think, you know, that whole idea of actually taking some time away, I like to use the word decompress. That's my favorite word. I heard it first, I think it was... one of the presidents of the United States, he just finished his term in office, and they asked him what he was going to do next, and he was being interviewed, and I think it was Clinton, and he said, well, I'm just going to take some time to decompress. And I always thought that was a fascinating thing to say, and it works so well for small business people, that you need to take that 2 or 3 weeks or whatever it is to decompress and think through things.
This is a major sort of value in terms of how I manage my team and treat myself. It's that idea between active and passive thinking. Mm. And so, like, sometimes you have to solve a problem and it's urgent, right? And you're like, I have to think this through. I have to come up with a decision. We have to take an action, right? And then, but there's so many problems where when you just decompress, it's the passive mind is working in the background, and all of a sudden some kind of solution presents itself. And it's like, those are the more valuable solutions, I find, like the ones that kind of just come to you, because you're taking care of yourself and you're taking care of your mind, and you're decompressed. And I think those are the real innovations.
So when Kevin needs to disappear and hide and decompress, where does Kevin go?
I'm going hiking.
All right.
I'm going off the grid.
Are you like no cell phone, that off the grid?
Yes, 7 days of no electricity. We're so attached to our phones, right?
Yeah, okay.
And especially as a business owner too, right? So just that feeling of rewiring my brain, I can't wait.
You don't have to tell me all the details, but I'm curious, 7 days of hiking, mountains, warm climate, like what are you able to tell us?
It's going to be in the mountains, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's a little X on a map somewhere, and I'm not telling anyone where it is.
I have to fly a long ways to get there.
All right. You know, I get you to share that, because I think it's just so important. What a show we've been having. And Kevin, you're an awesome guest. I mean, I really appreciate it. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you and ask you some questions about your company, how would they go about doing that?
They can find our phone number on our website, and also write us at beer@littlebrownjug.ca.
Awesome. Thank you. Kevin, again, thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule to join me on the show.
Thanks, Richard.
To our listeners, you know what I'm going to say. I'm going to thank you for tuning in. I always get really excited when I'm talking to small business owners who are passionate about their products and services and what they're doing, and they're connected to the community. I think Kevin, Little Brown Jug, are a little mess up there. So thank you for tuning in. You know what I'm going to ask? If you have a thought, an idea, a question, send me a note at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I want you to remember something: to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.